Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to our presentation today. This is Non-Applicable Clauses, Permissible Exclusions, Exemptions, Developing a Better Understanding of What Can and Cannot Be Excused in an Audit Assessment. My name is Joseph Krolikowski. I am the QMS Program Manager for Perry Johnson Registrars. Now, our topics for today, we're going to be covering what are non-applicable clauses, what does that term mean? We're going to unpack some of the high-level requirements that apply to this issue. We're going to have an in-depth discussion on what is outsourcing and how this factors into our treatment of non-applicable clauses. We're going to take a look at some of the historical aspects of this concept and how it is addressed within ISO 9001:2015, which presumably most of our participants today, that is the standard that you are certified to. We're going to discuss the impact of a limited scope and how that can impact exemptions. And we will take, as I said, your questions at the end of the presentation. Now, a special note for today, for our presentation, we are going to be examining these concepts as they are addressed in ISO 9001:2015. As I mentioned, it's our presumption that most of our participants, that's the standard that you work with. Now, these concepts do appear in many other standards, AS 9100, IETF, et cetera. But when you start getting into the sector-specific requirements, there are going to be some nuanced differences. So we do have webinars on those standards, all three of them, and many other topics. So I do invite you to visit our website for further information if you are in one of the more specialized standards. So let's begin with what are non-applicable clauses. Now, this concept, that term, comes from section 4.3 of ISO 9001. And here's what it reads. It says that your scope needs to state the types of products and services that you provide, and it will provide justification for any requirement of this standard, which means ISO 9001, that has been determined to be not applicable to the scope of the system. Now, 4.3 goes on to state that the scope, including these non-applicable clauses, needs to be maintained as documented information. That means it needs to be written down somewhere. Now, this can take a variety of formats. It doesn't have to be a quality manual, but it does need to be established in some official capacity. Now, for our presentation today, we're going to be referring to non-applicable clauses under the innocuous term exemptions. That just kind of rolls off the tongue a little bit easier, I think. So for an exemption to truly be justified, it has to be something that is not part of the quality management system as defined by the scope. So that means it's not a case of you don't want it audited, it's a case of it doesn't exist within your quality management system. So let's kind of unpack this concept to get a better sense of understanding that requirement. Begin with, we need to look at the high-level requirements that are applied to this. Now, within my presentation today, I've called upon guidance from TC 176. This is the committee that writes ISO 9001. The Auditing Practices Group, this is a collective that represents both ISO and IAF. We're going to refer to content within the standard itself, both auditable and guidance content. And in a couple places, I'll even be referring to the TS 9002 document. This is guidelines for the application of ISO 9001:2015. This is an official ISO guidance document. So let's go back in time and talk first about the committee position papers. Now, back in October 2008, shortly after the ISO 9001:2008 standard was published, the committee that writes ISO 9001, they issued a couple of officially binding guidance documents. We'll refer to these by shorthand as 524R6 and 630R3. Now, these two papers taken together had a requirement that was considered rather controversial at the time. And what was so controversial was that in both cases, it made the case that you could not exclude something if it was outsourced. Now, from 524R6, it stated, examples of situations where conformity to ISO 9001 should not be claimed include where an organization excludes a requirement on the basis that the activity is outsourced. Then from 630R3, it states that a process that affects product conformity cannot be ignored if it is outsourced, and it can't be excluded from the quality management system. So in other words, if you are outsourcing an activity, it is not acceptable that you claim that activity as an exemption. And if you are doing so, you should be getting a nonconformance during your audit process. Now, as I've pointed out, this is guidance from the committee that wrote the standard itself. This is not something that we can just get around. Now, the elephant in the room with this, obviously, is design. And to this day, we are still having this discussion with clients who, in some cases, are unusually fearful of being called design responsible. But nevertheless, if it is a situation where design is applicable, be it through outsourcing or what have you, you have to have design as part of your classification. Now, in the past, we treated design as a very black and white issue. We had clients in the past who claimed an exemption for design solely because designs were being provided by a parent company, a sister company. Now, those exemptions potentially were not acceptable and should not have been automatically accepted. Now, I'll be giving you some clarification on what that means in a couple of slides. But there are two basic justifications to exclude design. Firstly, that you receive a complete product design from your customers. Now, understand what I mean, complete product design. That means that design is ready to walk out to the shop floor and be manufactured. Or the auditee does not manufacture products. You know, this could be like a warehouse, a distributorship, what have you. Another is a third option that we'll be exploring a little bit later in our presentation. But these are the two basic starting justifications. Now, you might be asking yourself, well, if my parent company does design and the auditor is not going to visit the parent company, how can you audit something I don't do? Now, this is something that we've had expressed to us, not just by clients, but by auditors too. Auditors have put their hands up and said, hey, wait a minute, they're not doing anything here. How do I audit this design process? Well, what you have to understand is we're not auditing the actual activity. We're auditing the outsourcing controls. And with that in mind, I want to transition to understand what is outsourcing. Now, this is a term. It is officially defined in ISO 9000. That's the Fundamentals and Vocabulary document. Outsourcing is understood as making an arrangement where an external organization performs part of an organization's function or process. And you'll note that it is the organization's function or process. It still belongs to you. This means that you still have ownership of that function or process, even if it isn't done in your facility. And there's a very helpful note written into ISO 9000 that goes with this definition. It states, an external organization is outside the scope of the management system, but the outsourced function or process is within the scope. So again, we're not going to go to the parent company and audit design, but we are going to hold that organization responsible for controlling it as an outsourced activity. It's a very important distinction. Now, there's a lot of different examples of what can be outsourced. Probably the most common of these is calibration or verification of measurement devices. I would opine that probably 95% of our certified clients that do manufacturing have at least one device in their building that they are working with an outside laboratory for calibration or verification purposes. Some of the other common items that get claimed as outsourced, or that where there is an aspect of it that's provided by an outsourced activity, include training or customer service or purchasing or manufacturing or non-conforming product disposal. Each of these has been presented here with a clause from ISO 9001. Now, where is outsourcing actually discussed in ISO 9001? Well, that is section 8.4, and it's a very to-the-point statement, very on the nose. You will ensure that externally provided processes, products, and services conform to requirements. That's clause 8.4.1. And we get some clarification on that in section A8, which is the explanatory annex within ISO 9001, where it states that all forms of externally provided processes, products, and services are addressed in 8.4, whether through an arrangement with an associate company or outsourcing processes to an external provider. So even within the standard itself, they're talking about affiliated companies, associated companies. Now, outsourcing is also discussed in some of the other high-level documents that I mentioned earlier. In the 9002 document, it states that external providers could include the corporate headquarters, associate companies, suppliers, or someone to whom the organization has outsourced a process. The auditing practices group has weighed in on this in their document scope of ISO 9001, where it states that outsourcing is considered an input to the development of an organization's scope. As a key reminder, when we audit an outsourced activity, we're not auditing the actual activity itself, but we are rather confirming that the appropriate controls have been established by the organization. That's the real heart of what we're doing in auditing that activity. So what do we mean by controls of an outsourced activity? Well, if you think about it, there's a lot of different ways in which you might control something that someone outside of your company is doing for you. This could be done through contracts, through purchase orders, through having terms and conditions outlined on your website, by going to that external provider and performing an audit, by having work instructions that you provide to that external provider. Our auditor is going to look at these items, these methods of control. Again, we're not going to be getting in the car and going up the street to the external provider themselves. We're going to look at what you have in place for controlling that activity. So let's consider an example. Let's say that we have an organization that outsources 100% of their calibration verification activity to a local laboratory. Our auditor is going to look at, for example, a contract that's been issued to that calibration laboratory, the calibration records that were issued by that calibration laboratory, and the gauge labeling applied by the calibration laboratory. Now, please note that none of that equivocates to a review of the actual calibration activity itself. And in this scenario, none of the applicable clauses from ISO 9001 that pertain to calibration would be claimed as an exemption. They all apply, albeit in some cases, as an outsourced activity. Now, I want to mention for our attendees today, one of the things that we've trained our auditors to do, and we do it as part of our executive committee review also, is we spend a certain amount of time on organization websites. Websites have become a very important part of the audit process. Now, bear in mind, your website is admissible as audit evidence. This is one more piece of evidence that we can look at during our audit process. So what are we looking for when we review the website? Well, we want to confirm that it accurately reflects your scope of activity. If you've been certified for injection molding and your website has all kinds of information on it about press brake machining, well, we have a disconnect here. We need to kind of unpack this and figure out what's going on. Also, does your website reference design activity? This is the little trip up that is actually somewhat more common, particularly if you are classified as no design. That's a very key aspect of this. So if you're classified as no design, but your website's talking about design, now we've got a concern. Now we've got an issue. So when we reach out to an organization like this, where the website's talking about design, but we've classified them as no design, well, that explanation usually falls into one of a few categories. Well, corporate provides the designs. Well, okay, we've learned that that's not acceptable to claim design as an exemption then. Sometimes what we're told is we don't provide design, we just want to attract customers by saying that we do. Well, again, remember, your website is admissible as evidence in the context of the audit. So again, your website and your design classification need to be aligned with each other. Once in a while, we're told that, well, we do design some of our products, but we haven't designed anything for 30 or 40 years. Now, that is obviously quite rare. It has come up a couple of times. We take those on a case-by-case basis. I can't give a definitive answer on that, only to say that we've looked at those on a case-by-case basis. Now, I do want to talk for a few minutes about exemptions rooted in a limited scope, because we do have a couple of clients where this has come up. Most of the time when we have an organization that contracts with PJR, what they're looking for is for their entire operation to be certified, everything within the four walls. But every now and then we have an organization that wants to have a limited scope. Now, this could be for financial reasons, could be for other reasons. It's usually financial. Where that is the case, it is possible that a portion of the ISO 9001 standard may be considered for exemption that would not have been possible in a full scope situation. Here's an example. Let's say we have an organization that manufactures clothing, and they have two primary markets. They have industrial markets and commercial markets. And for this example, we're going to say that they're making leather goods and polyester goods. Now, in ISO 9001 2015 section 855, there are clauses that pertain to warranty provisions. So in our example here, let's assume that the organization offers warranty returns on their commercial products, but not on their industrial products. Now, if that organization was only pursuing ISO 9001 for their industrial product line, it's possible that they'd be able to claim a full or partial exemption from section 8.5.5. So that's a possible application of a limited scope exemption. They are very rare. So what happens if you are claiming something as an exemption and you shouldn't be? Well, in most cases, what should happen is a nonconformance is going to be written in the context of the audit. Now, we've looked at what the clause numbers would be a little bit earlier in our presentation. Now, if an auditor writes you up for an exemption that you don't agree with, you don't agree with the nonconformance, you always have the right to file a dispute. Now, that process is discussed in PGR Procedure Pro 10. Now, Pro 10 is available anytime on our website. If you go to the homepage, go to the bottom of the homepage, you're going to look for a link entitled registration document download. That's where you'll find the verbiage about Pro 10. Now, way back in 2017, 6 years ago now, we actually rolled out a new certification option for clients who receive some or all of their product designs from a parent or affiliate company. And we refer to this option as full design outsourced. Now, for a full design outsourced organization, there's a couple of specific things that happen. First of all, we calculate audit time, potentially calculate audit time, I should say, in the same manner that we use for a no design client. In other words, that the audit time is the same. There's no added measure of time. I'll be giving some clarification on that in a couple of slides. Any organization classified as full design outsourced must not claim any part of the relevant design section, or 8.3, as an exemption. Also, their certificate scope statement must reference design activity because it is part of their scope. Now, the outsourced process controls have to be included in the assessment. Now, when we rolled this process out, this full design outsourced option out, we actually reached out to the ANSI National Accreditation Board, or ANAB, which is our US-based accreditation body, to make sure that we had their blessing on this. Now, they generally indicated that they felt what we were doing was appropriate, but they emphasized that controls had to be applied to the outsourced processes, and that those controls had to be included in the audit process. And they here are some direct quotes from what they stated. They said, first of all, the complexity, activities, and risks that are present due to an outsourced provider of processes, products, or services need to be controlled or confirmed as required by ISO Section 8.4. They went on to say 8.4 has many requirements that apply to the organization and have to be confirmed or evaluated by the certification body, or PJR, when certifying an organization with outsourced processes, products, or services. Now, in terms of audit time, ANAB went on to indicate that they strongly object to any automatic time reductions regarding product design status. Here's an excerpt from what they said at the time. In all cases, the certification body is required to clearly, effectively, and realistically justify and document justifications for any adjustment, whether it be an increase or a decrease in audit time from the established minimum audit day tables. So in other words, if we are classifying an organization as full design outsourced, we're not permitted to initially reduce audit time unless we've had an on-site auditor give us some assurance that the controls being applied are mature, highly effective, and can be assessed with no added audit time. So we now have four classification options for your design status. Let's go ahead and see what those four options are. First of these, of course, is full design. This is an organization that is responsible for the design of at least one of the products that they manufacture. Now, please note, if you have hundreds of products and you only design 1% of them, you are still full design in the eyes of ISO 9001. And in that situation, all sections of clause 8.3 are applicable for any company classified in that manner. There is also the no design option. This is an organization that receives all designs from their customers or otherwise does not interact with product designs. Now, in this instance, they can claim all of section 8.3 as not applicable, can be taken as an exemption. Now, if you receive product designs from parent or affiliate companies, but you don't have any responsibility for those designs, and very importantly, if you do not advertise or otherwise represent that you're responsible for product design, you may, emphasize on may, also qualify for classification as no design. We've had a couple of clients where this was the conclusion that was reached. We also offer an option called partial design. Now, partial design is kind of an interesting option. This is an organization that provides technical input, review, verification, or other design services to their clients, but does not typically have responsibility for final design approval. Now, in this instance, you're allowed to exclude some, but not all of Section 8.3, because part of the responsibility is yours, and part of the responsibility rests with your, usually with your customers. And then finally, we have full design outsource. This is an organization that receives all or some of its product designs from parent or affiliate companies and is advertising or otherwise representing that they are responsible for product design activity. And in this case, all portions of Clause 8.3 are applicable and cannot be excluded. We definitely want to ensure that our audit process is value added for our clients, and at the same time, we want to make sure that we are meeting all applicable requirements. Obviously, making sure that exemptions are justified is part of that process. I'd like to invite you to tune in for one of our other presentations. We have ISO 9001:2015, an introduction to the world's most popular standard. This is a structured introduction. If you're still kind of getting your feet wet with ISO 9001, that's a great webinar to check out. We also have a newer webinar, Your Ongoing Relationship with PJR. This is a kind of a two-part webinar. We talk about how we address changes to the contract if you have changes within your system or growth for perhaps within your organization. And we also talk about disputes within the audit process. Now, we have webinars on a variety of other topics, including stage one audits, AS9100, process mapping, etc. If you'd like to be kept informed of the latest news automatically, the very best way for you to do that is to go to our website at www.pjr.com. Go to the bottom of the page, look for the space where you can enter your email address, click subscribe, and you will be opted in for automatic updates on new standards, changes to standards, upcoming webinars, and other points of information. Thank you for your time. I'm going to go ahead and unlock the question portion of the dashboard and see if we have any questions today. Okay, I am seeing a question from Max Moore. Could a justification for an exemption in design be not manufacturing or completing the creation of a software program? So Max, if I'm understanding your question right, if you're not manufacturing anything, if you're only distributing a software program or if you're administering a software program, that is potentially justification for excluding the design activity. If I have misunderstood your question, I'll ask that you re-enter it. Do we have any other questions I can answer today? We'll give Mr. Moore just a chance to provide a revised question if that is the case. Any other questions today? Confirming for Mr. Moore that I've answered his question. Very good. Okay, well, I'll wish all of you a great day and a safe weekend. Thank you.